Hello everybody, I'm George Milan. Thank you for coming back to my channel. And this is marking the 85th anniversary of the death of Viscount Craigavon. Now, not a household name in most places, not even very well known anymore in Northern Ireland, where he was the inaugural Prime Minister. And he's the only PM of Northern Ireland to die in office. Remember, from 1921 to 1972, there was a Prime Minister of Northern Ireland, even though Northern Ireland is within the United Kingdom, as well as a Prime Minister of the UK, above the Prime Minister of Northern Ireland. So James Craig obviously is a seminal figure in the history of Northern Ireland and to some extent in the whole of Ireland. I used to try and read history books written from a unionist perspective about Northern Ireland because so many books are written from a nationalist perspective about Northern Ireland or indeed Ireland inflexible. Unionists were thought to be staunch. That was the primary virtue for them. Whereas Nash is supposed to be zealous. And then that was often applied to Protestantism as Catholicism. So anyway, James Craig, he only seemed to have one facial expression, came across as rather gormless, flinty, uncharismatic. So he came from a very affluent family in Northern Ireland. And his father, also James Craig, had made £1 million, over £1 million through whiskey. And £1 million then in the late 19th century was a staggering sum. You could put at least two zeros on the end of it. So James Craig grew up in very comfortable circumstances. He was one of seven children, and he was the penultimate one. But his father decided that they had to make their own way in the world and not help each other too much, send them all to different independent schools. James Craig attended Murchison Castle School in Edinburgh, which is still going, they wouldn't go to the top independent schools of the United Kingdom like Eton and Harrow. So he worked as a stockbroker and fighting in the Second South African War, 1890-1902. I believe he only joined up in 1900 though. So he was very aware of the of Northern Ireland status, or Ulster though. People talking about home rule for Ireland within the United Kingdom. He said, no, that would lead ineluctably to complete separation from the United Kingdom. So let's not have that. Anyway, we got into politics as a unionist, as in wanting Northern Ireland to stay within the United Kingdom. And if home rule came for Ireland, Ulster, that's a northern province, or at least most of it, ought to be excluded from that and remain part of the unitary British state. Needless to say, he was of the Protestant denomination. I think it was a Presbyterian rather than Church of Ireland, distant Scots ancestry mostly. And then he was instrumental in getting the Ulster Solemn League and Covenant signed, whereas hundreds of thousands of Ulster men signed this agreement that they would do anything to resist home rule for Ulster, ideally stop it for the whole of Ireland. Allegedly some signing their own blood, and almost the same number of women signing a document in support of the Solemn League and Covenant. The name Solemn League and Covenant, obviously a reference to that 17th century document in Scotland against the prayer book being imposed there. And the classic work on this, well, Locus Classicus, is the Ulster Crisis by A.T.Q. Stewart and so forth. And he was instrumental in founding the Ulster Volunteer Force, not meaning the terrorist organization of the 1966 Foundation, but the militia of the 1913 Foundation. And there's no lineage between them. Nobody was in one UVF, two in the second UVF. What else? And ordering all their uniforms from Moss Brothers. Was he really willing to fight against the British Army to prevent home rule for Ulster? And he was involved in bringing in rifles and indeed crimes, overpowering, kidnapping police officers, tying them up, cutting telegraph wires. So nobody was killed or wounded, but nevertheless, these were crimes. But then, you know, the home rule thing was suspended when the First World War came. Don't want to take you all through the history. So when Northern Ireland became a distinct entity in the United Kingdom, in May 1921, George V came to Belfast, opened the Parliament of Northern Ireland, initially meeting in a Presbyterian cemetery. And Edward Carson, who'd been leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, decided he wouldn't take over, he wouldn't be Prime Minister. He'd let a younger man, James Craig, do it. Sir James Craig, knighted, was later ennobled as Viscount Craigavon, named after his house. So Craigavon obviously related to his surname Craig, I suppose from Irish, like Rock River, but be Carrig, Avon, be being anglicised somewhat. Then there was a lot of violence at the time, sectarian violence. The Irish Republican Army, a terrorist organization, was murdering police officers, soldiers, Protestant civilians, and so forth. And there were loyalist terrorist organizations like the Ulster Protestant Association murdering Catholic civilians and so forth. So the Catholic community, he didn't have their confidence. He didn't feel they did enough of them. And so when Eamon de Valera, later Taoiseach of ERA, said, you know, Ireland is a Catholic nation, in response to that, Craig Gavin said, well, we have a Protestant parliament for a Protestant people, and I'm proud that I'm an Orangeman and so on. So part of the Orange Order, this Protestant fraternal organization, which is also very monarchist. Strictly speaking, it's not necessarily unionist. It doesn't say anything about the Act of Union and all their documentation. So when the Second World War broke out, he said, we are the king's men, of course, we'll fight because, you know, George VI has declared war on Germany. But not that Northern Ireland had any choice. It was part of the unitary British state. And I know there was devolution within it. But once Westminster proclaimed war on the Third Reich, that was it. Northern Ireland was at war and so on. But he was keen that there not be conscription in Northern Ireland. He knew that the nationalist community would resist it. Would he simply be giving military training to some guys who would then want to be in the IRA? So fascinatingly, he said in 1920, we are Irishmen. We always hold the Ulstermen are Irishmen and the best of Irishmen, much the best, as well as believing he was British and so on. So he's married, he had children, and his title was hereditary. Obviously, his son and grandson inherited it, and it is an extinct title because his grandson died without children. Well, what else about him? So kind of unimaginative, too rigid, maybe reactionary, didn't do enough to help the poor, wasted a lot of money building Stormont Parliament building when there was mass unemployment, should have done enough to relieve the suffering when there was real poverty in Northern Ireland in the 1930s. The Great Depression hit Northern Ireland harder than maybe anywhere else. And, you know, doesn't seem concerned to stop sectarianism. So the Royal Ulster Constabulary, that's the police, had a large Catholic minority when he started out as Prime Minister.